John saw a harlot sitting on a dreadful beast, and she was drunk with the blood of the saints and of the martyrs of Jesus. John knew this woman. She had been the beautiful bride of Christ. But while she was hiding in the wilderness, she became powerful and became like that which once persecuted her. She then persecuted those of her own whom Rome had persecuted. John was amazed by the sight, because it is hard to accept one whom you once knew as righteous now being the persecutor. All that was the first six verses of Revelation 17. The story continues now in verse 7 of Revelation 17. But the angel said to me, "Why did you marvel? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has the seven heads and the ten horns." As I told you this morning, when John marveled with great amazement at this woman, it caught the attention of the angel. John, why are you amazed? Why are you marveling? Israel of old did this very thing. Why could not new Israel do the same thing? As old Israel did, so new spiritual Israel did. John no longer had to marvel because the angel was going to explain things. But as he starts to go through his interpretation, our first temptation might be to say, "Mr. Angel, you didn't quite interpret these things enough for us." For he uses signs to give us more signs. However, God had the angel reveal just exactly what God wanted revealed. The saints living at the time of John's writing and those who would live for several centuries afterwards had a much different situation with this great harlot than we do at the present. Though that could change quickly. Therefore, the revelation of the harlot was veiled. If the explicit details of a prophecy about the church's enemy are revealed, then two things could happen. Number one, the enemy would find out, bringing on persecution sooner. And number two, the dragon could change the appearance and the tactics of the enemy so as to lead astray more Christians. And that certainly didn't need to happen. God also wants His people to see, His people today to see, that the new enemies are like the old enemies. And the new will be defeated like the old. That is why the book of Revelation is filled with images from the Old Testament. And we noted that this morning in the first six verses. The old is like the new, and the new will go down just like the old. Now, the next section is verses 8 through 14, where the angel speaks about the mystery of the beast. And I want to break it down by its parts. First of all, verse 8. The beast that you saw was and is not, and will ascend out of the bottomless pit and go to perdition. And those who dwell on the earth will marvel, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they see the beast that was and is not and yet is. The beast ascended out of the bottomless pit. The same place where the locusts in Revelation chapter 9, during the fifth trumpet of judgment, where they ascended from. They also came from the bottomless pit. The angel said the beast was and is not and will ascend because the beast experiences defeat but comes back in another form. The beast is related to the locust of Revelation 9 in that they are both demonic. And so he goes into perdition because he will be destroyed, although he is incredibly powerful and rich. And the angel said, the people of the world will marvel at this sight. They will marvel when they see the beast that he was and is not and yet is. And that someone so great as the beast could be destroyed. They marvel because their names are not written in the Lamb's Book of Life, written since the foundation of the world. In other words, not being Christians, they did not know these things beforehand. Not being Christians, they did not realize that the beast is 666. Short of perfection. He's not God, although he and the world thinks that he is. The world marveled differently than John did. Remember verse 6 from this morning? John wondered at the meaning of the beast, but especially of the harlot. And he was amazed with horror that the former woman of God could kill her own people. The world wonders in a different sense. They have a sense of awe and admiration. Verses 9 and 10, the seven heads. Here is the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. There are also seven kings. Five have fallen, one is, and the other has not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue for a short time. This is the mind that has wisdom. The same thing was said in regard to calculating the number of the beast. Back in chapter 13, verse 18. So the angel said, the seven heads are seven mountains. And this is perhaps a reference to Rome, which was built upon seven hills, or the seven world empires that the world has seen. The woman sits on the seven mountains. In other words, the seven mountains and the beast are the same. She sits on the beast, but she sits on the seven mountains. The beast is the Roman Empire, or the Roman Empire is one of those seven mountains, if it be accepted that the mountains represent kingdoms. The seven heads are also seven kings. Five, at the time of John's writing, had already fallen. And if we take the interpretation that these were actual kings, then that would be Augustus, Tiberius, Gaius or Caligula, Claudius, and Nero. But the other interpretation says that by kings, kingdoms are meant. And that is not unusual. That's what's done in Daniel chapter 7 that Caleb read from just a few moments ago. Then in that case, the first five kingdoms would be Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persia, and Greece. And then Rome would be the one that is. One is, that is, currently alive or reigning when John wrote. If we take the king approach, that would be Vespasian. Or if it's the kingdom interpretation, that would be Rome as the sixth head. The last was yet to come. When he came, he would continue for a short time. If you go the route of the Roman Caesars, that would be Titus. Or again, if we're talking about the kingdom view, then Christian Rome, or the Holy Roman Empire, would be the seventh head. Now you'll notice here something that's going on. There's a lot of signs being given. Sometimes more than one sign is ascribed to one thing and so forth. And this is an important point. The same symbol can be used for more than one thing. Or the same thing can be represented by more than one symbol. Why would God do that? Is He trying to confuse us? No. It's for the sake of emphasis. Do you remember when God gave Pharaoh two sets of dreams? You know, seven cows and then seven ears of grain. And they weren't two different events. It wasn't a set of 7 years followed by another set of 7 years, but rather, Joseph said to Pharaoh, God gave these visions to you twice like this to emphasize it, to confirm that these things are going to happen. So it was all talking about the same event, but God just emphasized it by saying it twice. Now in verse 11, we learn about an eighth head. The beast that was and is not, is himself also the eighth, and is of the seven, and is going to perdition. The beast is going to be an eighth king or kingdom. He would be different from the others, perhaps more powerful, or he would epitomize all that the beast, Rome, or any persecuting government would stand for. He would be of the seven. Now, does that mean he is one of the seven who takes on a new role? And so that's why he is called an eighth? Or is this merely saying that he would just be like the seven, but be greater? Well, he would be greater because he was not one man, but represented an office filled by many. Until the time of the end. He is going into perdition. The whole beast, the whole empire would go down with him. Again, I want to take you to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. For it shows that the beast, the harlot, this leader will continue until the time that Jesus returns. And then, at that time, at the second coming of Christ, He will bring all these down. 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 8 and 9. And then the lawless one will be revealed. That's when the one who's restraining is taken out of the way, verse 7 that I read earlier today. Whom the Lord will consume with the breath of His mouth and destroy with the brightness of His coming. The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan, with all power, signs, and lying wonders. Now we move into the next part, verses 12 through 14. And in verses 12 and 13, back in Revelation 17, we learn about there's 10 more kings. The 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who have received no kingdom as of yet, or as yet. But they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. These are of one mind, and they will give their power and authority to the beast. They had received no kingdom as of the writing of the book of Revelation. A new set of kings or a new kind of kings would be introduced to the Roman Empire or after it. But it was future from John's standpoint. The angel said they would receive authority as kings. They are a new kind of king, yet they have the full authority of kings. Yet their authority was limited for 1 hour, which is simply saying that it would not last for very long. Their authority as kings is with the beast, so that there is still a Roman connection. Their allegiance is to the beast, for they receive their power from him. Now, let's look at Daniel chapter 7, and I want to read the verse that Caleb read earlier, but then I also want to jump down and read verse 24. So Daniel 7, verse 7, then verse 24. Because this shows the same beast and the 10 horns as revealed to Daniel. Daniel wrote, "After this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast." That's Rome. "Dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it." In other words, different than Babylon, Medo-Persia, and Greece. "And it had 10 horns. Verse 24. "The 10 horns are 10 kings who shall arise from this kingdom. And another shall rise after them. He shall be different from the first ones and shall subdue 3 kings. Now back here in Revelation 17, the angel told John that the 10 kings are of one mind, showing that they are unified, showing unity in what they do. They give their power and authority to the beast. What they receive from the beast, they give right back to him. Now verse 14. "These will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings. And those who are with him are called, chosen, and faithful." This is a great war. Or, as chapter 16 named it, Armageddon. Remember what we looked at earlier today in verse 6 of chapter 17. There was the picture of warfare. Look at it again. John had said, "I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus." This is a full-fledged war that the harlot and the beast are fighting against God's people. And we're not just talking about public debates or arguing in the streets. We're talking about killing God's people and killing them in some of the most horrible ways that you can imagine. If you've never read Fox's Book of Martyrs, I'd encourage you to do so. Your eyes will be open in ways you never imagined. They fight a carnal war against the Lamb and His followers. The 10 kings try to obliterate the Lamb and His followers. The hope is that by killing Christians, others, of course, will not be converted. You know, let's just keep these people quiet by silencing them permanently. However, the angel said the Lamb will overcome them. This powerful beast of Rome, both versions of Rome that we've been talking about, will seem extremely powerful. And will seem as though she has the upper hand. But that's not the case, according to Revelation 17. The Lamb will overcome them. He will overcome them because He is King of kings and Lord of lords. He fights a war that the harlot and the beast are not capable of conducting. The only thing they understand is, you disagree with us, you die. A slow, torturous death. But he fights a war with the love of his saints. And while at first we think love cannot overcome a carnal war, the fact of the matter is it does. And it is. For the persecutor, seeing the love of the victims over and over and over again, soon the persecutor begins to change. And many of them are converted. And they stop their attacks, at least in some ways. Now, the angel said those fighting with the Lamb are called, chosen, and faithful. They're called because they have obeyed the gospel call. Because they have obeyed the gospel call, they are chosen by Jesus to be His. And they remain faithful to Him, even to the point of death. And that has a huge impact on those who are fighting against them. What about the waters that the woman sits upon? That's what the angel talks about next in verse 15. Then he said to me, "The waters which you saw where the harlot sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and languages or tongues." So obviously then, the waters were told exactly what they represent. People, multitudes, all nations, and all languages. Babylon. Remember, this is the name of the harlot back in verse 5. Sitting on water is consistent with the literal picture of ancient Babylon that was built across the Euphrates River. So God takes the literal picture and gives us the picture in the spirit. Here's this harlot who's like Babylon, and she sits upon the waters, and the waters are not just simply one nation. It's just not Rome or Italy. But it goes far beyond that. All peoples of the world have given and are giving and will give their support to her. So this is not restricted to one nation, but many nations participate. Even language is not a barrier. But she knows how to transcend all cultures, all languages, all thought processes, any kind of nationality. This harlot is able to go across it. No wonder she is called the Great Harlot. But in verses 16 and 17, this angel showed John that the harlot will be judged. Verse 16 says, "And the 10 horns which you saw on the beast, these will hate the harlot, make her desolate and naked, and eat her flesh and burn her with fire." So yes, as I alluded to this morning, for a time the beast supported the woman. Whether voluntarily or involuntarily, we are not told. But something happened or changed the beast that at some point in time, he turns on the woman. After some time, the secular governments turned against the apostate church. And right now, the world's governments do not pay homage to her as they once did. The hatred of the beast for the woman is displayed in four ways. They will make her desolate. They will make her naked. They will eat her flesh. And they will burn her with fire. So yes, she was riding upon the beast. She was directing the beast. But after a while, this horrible, dreadful animal says, "Hey, I don't like that anymore." And turns on the harlot. Though that perhaps has not happened entirely as of yet. But the angel wanted John to know and all his readers to know that this whole thing was of God. Verse 17. "For God has put it into their hearts to fulfill His purpose, to be of one mind and to give their kingdom to the beast until the words of God are fulfilled." So this is partly how God pours out His judgment and His wrath on the harlot that we've been seeing in several phases in past chapters. He uses the enemy against itself. You probably know that's not unusual. That happened quite often, especially in the Old Testament, where you'll see God's enemies suddenly turn on each other. And they kill one another and fight with one another. And that's exactly what's going on here. So God put it into their hearts to fulfill His purpose. Just as King Solomon said, the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. Like the rivers of water, He turns it wherever He wishes. Proverbs 21, verse 1. Our God works in the nations today. And He works among the governments. Even if we think the government's corrupt, even if we think the government's not good, well, look at these governments. They were working with the beast and the harlot. So were they good? No, they were corrupt. But God still used them. God put it into their hearts to fulfill His purpose. Whether they realize it or not, they play into God's hands. Just like Pilate and Caiaphas and all the others, Annas, who came together for the crucifixion of Jesus, they thought they were doing this all of their own. And yet God somehow was behind the scenes orchestrating these events. God put it into their hearts to be of one mind. Listen, brethren, I've been trying to preach on this repeatedly in the 4.5 years I've been here. God works in the affairs of the nations, and this is the point that I want this congregation to get. He does so for our benefit. What's going on in the world right now? If you turn on, go home tonight and turn on the news and you see what's going on, and you know what those things are, do you think to yourself, somehow this is for the benefit of the Lamb and His followers? Even the bad news. Even the things of which we don't approve. Somehow God is working. God is involved in these things, and it's for our benefit. It's for the church's benefit. I hope I'm getting the point across. And the angel said that this will happen until the words of God are fulfilled, until His purpose is fulfilled. He has a purpose for what these nations are doing, whether it be ours, the one north of us, the one south of us, or around the globe. It's for God's purpose. Finally, this vision ends with these words in verse 18. And the woman whom you saw is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. For John's first readers, Rome was the unmistakable great city. The woman who was once persecuted by Rome rose up in the fall of Rome, and instead of staying holy, adopts the abominations of Rome, becoming more powerful than the ancient Roman Empire, and for a longer period of time than pagan Rome ever was. From being persecuted by pagan Rome to becoming papal Rome and persecuting the same people whom pagan Rome once persecuted. The Holy Roman Empire. And she is still with us today. When I, of course, I'm a person who likes history, but in preaching school, we had a lot of church history classes, and I loved it. And I was amazed when you read of church history, and then you read the book of Revelation, or you read Daniel 7 and others, and you think, wow, God saw this coming, and He told us in the Word what was going to happen. If you've never done any reading in church history, I'd be glad to recommend to you a book or some books. And I think you'll be fascinated by what you read. as well as saddened by what has happened to our people in the past. But you'll also be pumped up with power knowing what's going to happen in the future, because we will win. Be on the winning side. Don't be on the losing side. We want to pray for you, therefore. We want to make you strong. We want to counsel with you. We want to study the Bible with you. We want to do something to minister to you as our brother or sister. Can we do that? If so, come forward right now, please, as we stand and sing.